simplest thing I can say is learning is now self-love. You know, it is the thing you do to assure yourself a good future, as well as to assure that for your team, for the people who depend on you.
Welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, an exploration of the idea of curiosity and its increasing importance for thriving in the digital age from the authors of The Curious Advantage.
Hello, and welcome to this episode of The Curious Advantage podcast. This series is about how individuals and organizations use the power of curiosity to drive success in their lives and businesses, especially in the context of our new digital reality. It brings to life the latest understanding from neuroscience, anthropology, history, business, and behaviorism about curiosity and makes these useful for everyone. My name is Simon Brown. I'm one of the co-authors of the book, The Curious Advantage, and Chief Learning Officer at Novartis. And today I'm here with my co-author, Garrick Jones.
Hello.
But unfortunately, our other co-author, Paul Ashcroft, can't be with us today. We're delighted to be joined by Vidya Krishnan, CLO of Ericsson. Vidya is an entrepreneurial leader with over 20 years of experience in a broad range of technology, engineering, learning, consulting, and operations, and with a specialism in ICT, information and communications technology, and digital business transformation. She's recognized for driving double-digit operating margins through successful team management, capabilities transformation, a startup culture with business innovation, and quality process streamlining. Currently as Chief Learning Officer or Head of Global Learning and Development for Ericsson, with the responsibility for transforming capability creation, business problem solving and workforce evolution, along with driving a significant culture change towards a more teaching and learning culture, which is where we're going to dig in curiously in more detail. Vidya has also taken a curious path to becoming a CLO, and we'll be asking her to share more on that shortly. The learning team at Ericsson have been recognised with various awards and are making great progress in many areas, including skills and data analytics. We'll hear a lot more of that later on. So welcome to the Curious Advantage podcast, Vidya.
Thank you so much, Simon. I'm an avid listener of this podcast, so it's such a special pleasure to be on it with you.
You're very welcome. So let's kick off by learning a bit more about you. From our previous conversations, I know you've had a very interesting career journey that I just alluded to before becoming Chief Learning Officer at Ericsson. Many different twists and turns and pivots.
Definitely.
Yep. So maybe you can share that path that you took to become a CLO.
I will. And definitely, I say curiosity has sort of been the rocket fuel for this crazy trajectory that I have been on. I am very lucky to be in my fourth career, and I hope I have at least as many ahead of me. I have been everything from a camp counselor in my youth, which is, I think, actually where I catalyzed both my love of teaching and learning, as well as problem solving, and then studied to be an electrical engineer and had a very fulfilling career part of network building, network operations, network dimensioning, building out the wireless networks of so many of our North American, South American, global customers at Ericsson. And then I transitioned to digital business. And there I was, a learning leader leading Ericsson's North American customer training practice. A very wonderful and exciting time to do that. And then I pivoted again, and I am now a proud member of Ericsson's global people team, heading global learning and development. So four sharp turns, but it all made sense at the time. So curiosity has been the red thread throughout it all.
And I'm interested in that. How has curiosity been the red thread through it all, Vidya?
It's very simple, Garrick. For me, and I think for most people, the will comes before the skill.
And oh, that's good.
I think that's usually true for most people. And if we, you know, expect it to be the other way around, it doesn't always happen. But at least for me in my life, you know, the will always came before the skill. There was an interest, a curiosity, something that would provoke my interest, and I wanted to learn more about it. And the more I knew, the more I sort of fell in love with it. And very often, things that I did as a side gig, just because I had the interest, just because I had the passion, and it was so rewarding and fun. And actually, in that moment, it's very low stakes because, again, there's no skill. It's just will. So things that I would sort of play with on the side or do as volunteer projects very often turned out to be the forces that shaped my side gig becoming my new front door. And so,
that's fascinating.
each pivot made sense.
I love that. Your psychics became your new front door.
And in many cases, Garrick, the will, you know, when you discover that you like doing something that you were curious about, then you have a very special drive, I think, to build the skills that you lack.
It gives you the energy, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I'm sure everyone will have heard of Ericsson, but they may not be fully clear on the current scope of the company. I know it's changed over the years from the early Ericsson mobile phones. And can you share more on what you're focused on these days?
Definitely, and very proudly. So, you know, Ericsson, we are 145 years old and we refuse to act our age, and something I'm deeply proud of. And we have always been a company about connection. We are a technology leader. We are in 180 countries with over 100,000 amazing people. And we create connections that make the unimaginable possible. This is our purpose, and it's one that we are deeply proud of. It involves technologies like 5G, intelligent networks, AI, and all of the emerging technologies needed to connect and unlock value in society, in business, in everything. So this, for us, has been a continuing mission. And now more than ever, you know, in the world we live in, connection, connectivity has become so vital to life and well-being and societal advancement itself. So it's a great time to be doing this work. 5G is ushering in just a new paradigm of both business and life. And it has prompted the need for us to really build future critical skills with more speed, with more scale, and definitely with more accountability than ever in order to make those connections happen.
And I think we'll dive a little deeper into how you're building those future skills in a moment. But I'd like to understand a little bit more to start with, if I could, just around what your role as CLO entails. I mean, what you were describing there with intelligent networks, 5G, these are very, very new areas. And it's not like you say, oh, I need someone with 10 years experience in 5G, please, because they probably don't exist. So huge need for learning. It'd be great to understand, you know, what's your role? What's the team look like? What do you spend your days doing?
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, just the same way technology is sort of inherently constantly upgradable, so are we. And that's the whole point of building these skills. So as a global head of learning and development, I and my wonderful team, we have, I think, a very special sacred responsibility for getting 100,000 people in those 180 countries to change themselves, to change their skill sets, and to change their mindsets, and to do that in a way that executes our strategy, as well as brings them deep belonging, fulfillment, and self-care, because their growth is the company's growth. So our work increasingly is shifting from being, you know, maybe before programmatic to now being much more systematic to build these future critical skills in the company and do it in a way that is increasingly repeatable, a bit predictable, controllable, and most of all, you know, proven to actually shift the skills of the company. So we spend a lot of our time focused on three areas: the ecosystem that it takes to do this, to make learning easy, all of the platforms and architecture and integration that's needed to do that, the culture system. Our culture system is called Ericsson on the Move, and it's all about, you know, creating momentum and mobility for our people in ways that involve both learning and teaching, contribution and discovery, experiential learning. And then our business system, which is all about this very systematic framework for connecting skills to our growth strategy so that we know what the most vital few skills are, what we call the global critical skills, and then really focusing our efforts on those critical skills so that upskilling and reskilling in those areas specifically is a business investment. And we are trying to make really strategic, pointed, but also very broad shifts in the capabilities of our people to deliver profitable growth.
That. There's lots of questions that prompts in my mind to go deep into. Maybe first one, you started with moving from programmatic to systematic. So what does that look like? Because that sounds hard to me.
Yeah, it is hard. I think it's hard. And I don't think we know everything there is to know about it. You know, it's a learning journey for us to do that kind of work. And I wouldn't really have it any other way. But it is absolutely a journey of discovery. I think the need to be more systematic than programmatic comes from our own business and their, you know, voice and their insights about what the pain points are today with learning, you know, and really with any massive kind of skill or culture change, which is complexity. There's never enough time. It often feels like there's never enough support, and how to do it is hard. And when you do find the time, finding the way is hard. People feel it's reactive. The whole idea is to build these future critical skills before you need them. Very often that's not the case. You only discover when it's too late what you don't have. And that often it's inadequate. People might be spending a lot of energy and time and money on learning, but it's not moving the needle for the business. These three things, you know, of complexity, reactivity, and adequacy, these were the three most vocal pain points that our people, our business partners, you know, made it very clear that really characterized the de facto state of learning. And that's what we have to change. Changing those things, you know, has to be done in a way that involves the entire company. So I think we imagine, you know, building future critical skills as systematic because it takes so many components to make it work. That's the system part. It requires, you know, many components working together. And we are trying to do it in a way that is locked and repeatable, even as it's evolving and getting better. It's not something that constantly requires a campaign or a program that, you know, lives and dies, but rather a state of conditions in the company that are constantly connecting our strategy to our skills, to our skill journeys, and then to proven skill shift. And by this, I mean, you know, the simple mission is we need to create more people in our company with more of the critical skills at higher levels of expertise. And then we need to put those skills to work.
So learning and teaching, and by teaching, I guess teaching and learning is connected, are really at the heart of how you're creating the critical skills required in the business and enabling a continual change and transformation. That's very clear. You're taking a systemic approach to it. How does that translate into, how has learning changed in, for example, how was it before you embarked on this journey, and what is learning looking like today for the individual in your company? And then where is it going? What does it feel like, these changes?
I think it's tremendous changes, even though there's so much about learning that's timeless, like curiosity. I think there's a lot about it that is very much changing. And thing that's changing it are all the forces that are changing the whole world, right? Societal, planetary, technological, pandemic, geopolitical, you name it. But all of it culminating in changing the way people are moving through the world of work. In effect, the way they're moving through their lives, that they are in fact moving, you know, in one form or another, even job crafting. You may occupy the same position and title, but there's no 2 days that are alike. So people really are on the move in the literal and figurative sense. Therefore, the focus of corporate learning is shifting from maybe a history or a legacy of curating, you know, content and experiences to right now. What I think where it's going is our responsibility is to create the conditions for systematic skill shift that then gets applied to executing our business strategy.
So how does that play out? So, excuse me, I'm really curious about this.
Yeah, no, this is a big transformation and it's playing out.
You've got your finger on the pulse of where it's going. I mean, what has it meant in terms of how you create the infrastructure for learning in your organization? What does it mean for the learner, the person? What's different? In the past, were people booked onto learning programs and they would go away, or what's changed or what's different?
Yep, I think three big things are different. You know, I think the first one is when it comes to people's time and sort of the ecosystem around them, it's that there's zero tolerance for zero learning. It's not optional. It's at the very heart of not only strategy, but strategy, execution, engagement of the employee, but now also increasingly well-being and self-care. All of this requires learning. So I think from the point of view of the employee, the simplest thing I can say is learning is now self-love. You know, it is the thing you do to assure yourself a good future, as well as to assure that for your team, for the people who depend on you, for the work that you want to be known for the growth of the company. And so it is no longer optional. And I think that's the first thing. That's the first dimension, you know, the time you allocate. Again, we've got to make learning easy and we've got to make it find the learner just as much as the learner finding the learning, because it's not optional anymore. The second thing for us is that we need people to make learning a habit, and a habit that matters. Meaning when we are looking at how to grow our talent, We have to differentiate between those who learn and those who don't, and those who make it a point to build skills in others and those who don't. And we want many, many more of the people who are constantly learning with their teams, from each other, with each other, and who are taking the time not just to learn, but to apply what they've learned, and apply what they've learned especially in amplifying the skills of other people. That is indicative of a giving culture that we wish to have as a company. That's what puts people on the move. All of us, if we reflect on where we've learned the most in our lives, it's when we were doing something, very often something we didn't think we'd be doing. And that is all about the experiential conditions. And usually there was someone there, either as a guide at our side or, you know, in some capacity to support us through sharing their expertise. Mm. So in that sense, you know, learning as a habit that matters is very much about people on the move, encouraging mobility through an open talent marketplace that is skills-based, and making sure that learners and teachers constantly find each other and recognize that that is valued as a differentiator for people. And then I think the third one is, again, you know, making learning profitable, which means the relevance of the skills that our people need to pay close attention to strategy, to growth, to what are the most vital areas in which they need to build their critical skills. And these are not just technological skills. They are technology skills. They are sales, commercial, business skills, and they are increasingly power skills. The skills of being human, of building relationships and partnerships and communicating effectively and storytelling and managing your time, working smarter and not harder. And so I think these are the three ways, Garrick. It's you know, managing your time and recognizing it's no longer optional, making it a habit that includes how well you teach others.
Yeah.
And thirdly, making it super relevant to our business, which means focusing on the critical skills that are connected to the strategy. That's what I think it demands.
You've put learning right at the heart of all this transformation that's going on in your organization at the moment.
I think it is at the heart. We didn't have to put it there. I think we're just recognizing that it's always been at the heart and we need to mobilize accordingly.
Well, you said you want to make learning easy in the system. How are you making learning easy?
Yeah, it is about, I think, having an ecosystem that can simplify, but also amplify, you know, how learning finds you and what content is trending, what people can teach you. In that sense, it's an amplifier, it's a simplifier, but then it also has to become an equalizer. It has to make learning accessible to everyone. And here is where I think, you know, building an intelligent ecosystem that is powered by AI algorithms and well connected and integrated through APIs with other systems allows people to feel that, again, curation is happening more automatically. The learning that they find and the learning that finds them is more personalized. It's finding them at the moment of need. It's finding them in a way that is seamless and is part of their daily workflow. And most of all, the simple things that it is that they have the time to do it, because it is part of the way their team works. And this, I think, is fundamental. You know, you could have the fanciest ecosystem in the world, and if people feel there's a culture and a reality in the company that I'm just too busy and I have no time to learn, instead of I have no time not to learn, you know, then the ecosystem is inadequate. So for me, making learning easy involves all of those things. That's what we're focused on.
So much wisdom in what you were sharing there, your 3 points. And again, so many areas we could dive into. I mean, zero tolerance to zero learning, making learning a habit and a habit that matters, and making learning profitable. Diving a little bit into the zero tolerance for zero learning. So how have you made that part of the culture? And what you were just saying at the end there around everyone being too busy, I don't have time to get through my to-do list, let alone get on to my own learning development. It's one we've been working very hard within the masters over the last couple of years to try to prioritize learning higher up the agenda so that people see the value and do create the space. How have you wrestled with that, and how do you get that message of zero tolerance for zero learning over in practice?
I think I'm very proud to tell you that it's not a message we have to work hard to inculcate. Our people already feel Fantastic. This way. I think that's what's made us the technology company we are for 145 years. I mean, for 145 years, we've not just been inventing the future, we've been reinventing ourselves to invent the future. We started, you know, as a company founded by a man and a woman, Lars and Hilda Eriksson, building a telegraph repair shop. And this is the company that brought Bluetooth. This is the company that created Erlang, which is the language in WhatsApp. This is the company that's leading the world in 5G. So when you are in this space and you work on technology that inherently is never done, is constantly being pushed and upgraded and innovated, I think our people fundamentally understand that requires the very same thing in ourselves. So I think there is a natural hunger. You know, if you're working at Ericsson, you value learning. If you're working at Ericsson, you know how crucial it is. You know that shifting our impact on technology and now the things we are doing to build our growth, to extend our leadership of mobile networks, to, you know, redefine business, to improve lives, to pioneer a sustainable future, all of those three things demands this constant valuation of learning. So I think that is there. It's the barriers that we have to remove. So really, the job of our ecosystem and all of the things that we do in our culture, the hunger to learn is already there. The value of it is already there. The key is to remove the things that impede it. And what impedes it? Definitely people feeling, I don't have time. And so we have to look at, what do you have to do things? First of all, are we equipping ourselves adequately with the skills of making time, of taking back our time, of working smarter, not harder? And I think every company, including us, is struggling with this right now. I mean, this is just the effect of the pandemic, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And then there's, you know, of course, Josh Burton's term, learning in the flow of work. And the idea, of course, is that everything is learning is just in time. Yes, there are in the future of AI algorithms around us, perhaps, which are serving us the stuff that we need when we need it. And that's a kind of intelligent context that is a little bit down the road, I think, although some people are getting close. But how do you think learning in the flow of work and time and learning and the need for that threading through of learning into our everyday things that we do, and not thinking of learning as something separate and not thinking of learning as something outside what we do, how do you think they relate? And of course, I'm going to ask you how curiosity relates to that as well. But let's start with learning in the flow of work. What's your views?
Learning and building skill is what happens to you on the way to solving problems. So the more we can be project-based and experiential in our learning, in the way learning finds the learner, that it's not just content, it's also people, it's also community, it's also work. Again, you know, this is still work in progress, but I'm super proud of how some of our most important learning journeys are now increasingly experiential. It's not just a course that you take, it is a journey that you make. And in that journey, you're working on real business projects with real people. And therefore, it's not just one skill that you're learning. It's not enough to learn AI. You have to learn how to do the storytelling associated with it. You have to learn how to do the power skills of communicating and the project management skills of collaborating, you know, the empathy skills of listening to the customer's pain points and turning it into insight. It's not just one skill at a time. It is this mix. So I think to answer the first part of your question, again, you know, learning is what happens when you're solving problems. So that's what it means to put learning in the flow of work. And for that matter, to put work in the flow of learning, to make it project-based and to make it community-supported. And here's where teaching matters so much. When you have really effective teachers, they are skill multipliers. And so deliberately connecting that, you know, and then also I think part of this, though, is requiring a shift that part of leadership, especially future leadership, is to be a learning driver. It is a core fundamental behavior that leaders are uniquely able to support, sustain, role model, and drive.
You're listening to the Curious Advantage podcast, inspired by the book The Curious Advantage, written by Paul Ashcroft, Simon Brown, and Garrick Jones. Subscribe to the podcast today.
So your approach then, the holistic way that you approach learning and us needing all these skills, not just perhaps technical skills, and how you place that in the context of a program or project, and you, as you say, learning in the flow of work or work in the flow of learning, it's really constructive. It's really about learning through doing as well, and very focused on how you build things and make things. Has that had a huge impact then on what the definition of learning is within Ericsson?
Yes, I think people have very much reflected and then accepted that, you know, the times in their lives in the past when they learned the most, it was really in the thick of something, right? In the thick of doing work, solving problems that mattered, facing challenge, overcoming it, getting continuous feedback as they did that, making an impact and seeing that impact for themselves. And so definitely we have seen a really nice empirical trend, for example, at Ericsson year over year, that the amount of learning that's happening measured not anymore by just, you know, volume of hours or something like that, but really about consumption, like what people are doing and the things that they're actually completing and consuming. That has gone up year over year. So I think there's definitely a much more broad definition of learning as a journey that has been increasingly internalized by our employees. And it's just the beginning of that, but we are definitely, that's a very unmistakable trend. Our people know that building critical skills is something that happens as much through experience and discovery and connection and contribution and not just through curriculum and completion.
And I guess a key part of that, and you said it earlier on, was around connecting skills to growth. So making sure that the upskilling and the reskilling ties back to the business strategy and there's that line of sight. How do you go about that? Because you also mentioned around how learning can be too reactive, and it's at a very high level, it seems very straightforward. If there's the business strategy that requires a set of skills, we build those skills. But in reality, it's never as clean and clear never. And straightforward as that. So how do you go about that process?
So this is a relatively new systematic approach that we're taking in the company. And it really has three parts. And the first part is what we call skill sensing. And this is the complicated but critical, first part of making sure that the strategy and the skills are connected. And that not just at a superficial level, but at a really deep level. And this is an act of co-creation, of having the right people involved in the right fora, of making sure that our business leaders see the strategy as containing the skills needed, the capabilities needed to execute the strategy. And a strategy that doesn't define its capabilities is an incomplete one. So that process of skill sensing playing out as a group of sessions and meetings and collaborations that occur as part of our business processes, that is relatively new, but that is the foundation of this. And we use the word sensing very deliberately because, again, if you knew what skills you needed 15 years out, you're not going to do anything about it. It's too far in the future.
Yes.
And if you know what skills you needed yesterday, it's too late. So somewhere between those things, there's this constant, sensing process that has to happen where you are literally looking at external trends, internal trends, external intelligence, growth, objectives, and all of the discipline that goes into crafting a strategy. And then you are together defining and then constantly refining what are the critical skills needed at scale relatively soon that are not going to happen, through the natural order. They need to happen, deliberately in order to execute the strategy. And defining them and making sure that once defined, they are super visible, unmistakable, and that every employee knows what they are is part of skill sensing. And that becomes the basis, quite frankly, for everything. We try to standardize the levels of the company of different skills. So we, say we have essentially a four-level system. So we want to know how many people are level four in this. How many people are level two in this? What does it take to go from level two to level four? And it could be different ways, but that's where the skill journeys come in. And again, we want them to be experiential. We also want them to be varied because people have different needs and different preferences, and we want them to find and craft and really own and co-own the journeys that work for them. But the key of it is, once you have that skill sensing and then you have the skill journeys that are acting on the skill sensing, the key measure of accountability is skills shift. And this for us is really the foundation of the analytics that we want to become much better at. We still feel we're at a very immature place here and we want to get to a much better one where we are able to give really actionable business insights on skill momentum, skills intelligence, what skills we have, what skills we need, how to mobilize skills to become higher, the right people, the right places at the right time. All of that is about skill shift. And that's really a leader's metric. The same way that our leaders today have operations reviews and quarterly business reviews, and they're looking at the results you normally look at. You're looking at financials and project conformance. We are now setting the infrastructure to look also at skills composition. Do I have enough people at level four in this critical skill? What do I have to do to get more people at level three? That shift from and to becomes a foundational business metric for leaders. Because that's the thing that determines if all the other results are going to happen.
That's fascinating. Thinking about, the skills sensing and then the skills shift, and this is a completely important new analytic for leadership. Does that link to, you talked about community before and the marketplace. How does your marketplace relate, your learning marketplace, relate to the skill shift that are required.
So much. Because as you said, it's really about these two things, isn't it? It's about building these future critical skills, and then it's about putting these skills to work. And so the marketplace for us, we wouldn't even call it a learning marketplace. We really say it's a skills-based open talent marketplace. And the idea is that, you know, this is a place where skill meets opportunity. And what we envision, you know, this work is underway now. We're very much on this journey. We're just at the beginning of it, but it's a journey that we undertake with, you know, with great care and great ambition, because we know that the marketplace we are trying to design is one in which employees can design their own future, which means that the opportunities they find are based not only on the skills they already have, but ideally some opportunities should be based on skills they don't have, but want to have. If I say that I want to go from level 1 to level 2 in something, that too should be considered in what opportunities I get matched to. And some of the opportunities I get matched to are things where I can be an expert and a lead, and maybe there are some in which I'm a learner. And so for us, that the promise of the open talent marketplace is that it really does become a reskilling engine for the company, by which skills you have are put to work and skills you don't have are built. And, you know, it enables a bit of self-shaping so that we are putting people on the move to find opportunity and build the skills they need. So we're, as I said, it's very early days for us here, but this is why we value it so much, because building future critical skills is incomplete unless you put those skills to work. And that's what we believe the marketplace will help us do faster than before and better than before.
I absolutely share your vision for sort of where that goes at that marketplace, and also then the analytics behind it. And you can almost see one day having a skills balance sheet for the company, and you're sort of then looking at, you know, have we increased the value of the skills in the in the company or not year on year, also recognizing that a lot of our skills expire as well. So you've got then the speed that skills are expiring, getting faster and faster. You've got new to world skills coming that are needed. And trying to quantify that is really hard.
You could say the financial systems are a great role model for us in this, because again, no matter what business you're in, any two businesses can speak the same language of the balance sheet. And we want something similar in skills, right? With assets that are valuable, assets that are depreciating, and this ability to look at it at any given moment and know where you stand and what you lack and what you need to do, and know the health of the company kind of through the lens of skills. I think our analytics as an industry and learning, they have not gotten us there yet, but that's where we need to go.
Yeah, I mean, I think that would transform the learning industry overall if we can get to there, because suddenly we're seeing, oh, hang on, as an organization, if we're not investing in learning, we're seeing our asset value of the skills of our people depreciating year after year after year. And that will have all the knock-on impacts of, not being able to deliver against the strategy, losing people, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So how far on that journey are you? Because I haven't heard of many, if any, I think companies who are sort of at the end of that to be able to fully quantify things. And you mentioned yourself, you're early stages, but which pieces of these are sort of in progress, which are the vision of where you want to get to, and maybe which are alive and people are experiencing now?
Yeah, no, I think if you ask any of us, we really feel we're at the very beginning.
Yes.
But we also feel that there are many other industries where this kind of analytic capability is actually quite mature. And so we also feel that we have to kind of look for the right, you know, example in an unlikely place and look at their analytics and what's the learning equivalent of that. So there's a little of that discovery that I think we still have to do. But where we are, I think the simplest, you know, start that we've made is we believe that skills shift as an OKR is crucial.
Yes.
And so we have started to put a lot of energy and effort into visualizing that in a simple way that is actionable. When you see it, you're like, okay, I don't have enough of this, I have enough of that, where a from and to can be easily articulated and you can set these meaningful targets and measure. So this very systematic four-part framework, right? Define the critical skills, standardize the levels of those skills, have skills journeys, and make it really clear, you know, what journeys equate to what level shift and what momentum, be able to take an inventory. And this is easy to say, and so far still very difficult for us to do. Take an inventory of the skills that you have at the organizational level, the unit level. Learn how to make our workforce planning a skill force planning, and then be able to show the progression of skill shift we are just at the early days of visualizing this as a metric and starting to define it. And now, you know, we've applied this to our critical skills. So we've started, definitely. We're showing it to our leaders, our executive sponsors for each skill area. Use this as a critical measurement to know both the targets that we've set and the progress that we have or haven't made. So I think we're firmly, you know, beginning. Now what we really want to see ourselves do is apply these analytics to really specific skills and the growth of them, and show how they're being used to accelerate the skill building and accelerate matching the skills to opportunity. So we talk about time to skill and sort of time to fill as being two things that we should accelerate through really specific pointed application of these analytics, but very early days for us.
I'm going to be paying close attention to see how you progress on this one. I think there's a lot of people
together, not alone.
Absolutely, yes, absolutely.
This is one of the ties that bind us, Simon. Like, we all need to figure it out together.
You know, you talked about learning from other areas and so on. I mean, it's astonishing. Do you hear you apply it to skills and the skill shift and analyzing that and understanding that? It really is fascinating, and I think underpins the new infrastructures that are going to emerge for very large organizations and global network-based organizations. I mean, I've seen some of this stuff developing in engagement, where you made that link to wellness and well-being and how learning is at the heart of that. And engagement of people within the workplace and meaningful work and finding it is also linked to well-being. And I know that some tracking is going on there, some interesting AI tools starting to emerge there. But I think there'll be some kind of convergence from both the communications communities and the engagement communities. But at the heart of it is the learning community. That's my hunch. But as Simon says, we need to watch this because, you know, you're doing amazing experiments and learning as you go. And it's fascinating to see where it'll go and what you will allow people to inhabit in terms of the infrastructure and how you can shift systems and organizations very quickly.
I think it's a timeless truth, though, Garrick. It's a timeless truth, but it's one that we have to newly invest in, which is the growth of your people enables the growth of your company.
Yeah, exactly. Go figure.
We're back to, so, but back making to the beginning. That happen.
Exactly, but a new context. Right?
Yeah, new context, which offers a new way, you know, to be much more systematic about it than before. It's always been a priority. That's not new. I think what's new is the approach that we're trying to take, which again has an ecosystem component, a culture system component, and a very much a business system component to making that journey successful.
So how does curiosity fit into all of this beyond just us being curious people? Where does curiosity fundamentally sit in your concept of learning and how learning is playing out in large systems?
You know, one of the most powerful taglines for our purpose is imagine possible. You know, our purpose is to create connections that make the unimaginable possible. And so that begins with, you know, the spirit of imagine possible. Imagine what it could be, and then think about what does it take to make it possible. And to me, that is curiosity. You know, curiosity is imagine possible. So it is the spirit with which every single one of these endeavors is happening. It is the catalyst that sparks, I think, the learning journeys. It's what we hope will be a centerpiece of, you know, our emerging open talent market, because it will be people becoming curious about how they can augment the work they do today with other kinds of work. It will be about managers being curious about what it looks like for people to, you know, take on more than one thing, to be a talent exporter and not just a talent importer. When you look at the mobility patterns of people, that we talk more today about lattices and the open discovery of opportunity, and not so much about climbing, you know, a ladder in a single direction. I mean, curiosity is at the heart of that mobility. And people wanting to, you know, to quote Richard Leiter, to grow deep rather than grow old by accumulating experiences. I think, you know, curiosity is the driver of all of that. So it is at the heart of that discovery for us.
Very good. And what about you personally? So what are you actually most curious about?
I think one of the reasons I feel so privileged to work at Ericsson, I've always been curious about connection of multiple kinds. Definitely technology connection. Like, how cool is it that, you know, there are no wires involved and we're able to talk to each other and bridge, you know, a pandemic in the distance of thousands of miles and feel that human connection. That's always been fascinating to me, and how something that looks invisible and effortless actually has so much complexity behind it. So I've always been curious about that kind of connection. I've also been curious about, so not just technological connection, but you could say psychological connection, like how humans connecting to each other, which is what makes learning to me, again, timelessly so powerful. I always say it's the second most powerful emotion right after love, because it's all about connection of people and unlocking that connection. So that's something, again, that I've just constantly been fascinated. And I think that's how I found my way here to this kind of work, doing the other kinds of work, because there was always this element of connection and I was deeply curious about it. And I think the third dimension is maybe, I don't know what I call it, neurological, like this amazing capacity the brain has for neuroplasticity, for just rewiring itself. Not always by accident, but sometimes on purpose, like we can actually make it rewire itself. This is a form of connection that I also find extremely fascinating. And I guess in some way, learning almost represents like the culmination of those kinds of, you know, it's the technology connection, it's the human connection, and then it's this sort of internal neurological connection. And I can't stop reading about that. That just fascinates me. Because it seems like a lot of good things are on the other side of that, you know, like better understanding of people, you know, harmonious living, living a happier life, doing good in the world, doing well. So those things I'm deeply curious about.
And there's a lot of research there to get stuck into in that topic as well. So,
so cool. Busy,
keep me curious for a long time. Fantastic. So what a conversation. I mean, we've covered a huge amount in there, and we could have gone on for hours into many different areas.
I have so many questions I want to ask.
A few summaries. I mean, the will coming before the skill. So how the curiosity and the interest comes first, how our side gigs become our new front door, how you move from the programmatic to the systematic, and how you've embedded learning into the culture within Ericsson. Really like your comment around how we can have the same position and title, but actually no 2 days are alike, that we need to be constantly learning.
Brilliant.
And then your 3 points around, you know, what's different. So we have to have zero tolerance for zero learning. We need to make learning a habit, and a habit that matters, and make learning profitable by making sure that there's that relevance of the skills that people actually need. How learning and skill building, it comes about on the way to actually solving problems. Really, really like that. And then your skills approach and ecosystem. So the skills-based open talent marketplace, how you talked about curiosity being as a catalyst and at the centerpiece of it. And then your 3 pieces around skills sensing, the skills journey, and skills shift. So in such a rich conversation. If there was one thing from all of that, or even something new that you'd like to leave our listeners with, what would that be?
I think it's so powerfully evident to us, and sometimes painful as well, that we have to learn our way to a better future. And therefore, we love to quote whoever said it first, that the future belongs to the learners, because we have to learn our way to a better future. And you could be predicting the future all day long, but you need to shape it. So I think for us, this is some of the highest purpose we could ever have, you know, doing this work with all of our people, because we really are serious when we say that we want to imagine possible and learn our way to a better future. So the future belongs to the learners.
I love that. So if the future belongs to the learners, then that's a question maybe listening in, you should ask yourself, how are you going to learn your way to a better future? What are you going to do as we go into this year to learn your way to a better future? Vidya, thank you. amazing conversation.
Yep.
It's been fantastic having you on. And thanks for sharing all of your rich wisdom and experience from Ericsson.
Thank you. We are on this journey together, all of our companies, and I think we're all at the beginning of a new era of it. So it's a great pleasure to be here with you, and we look forward to all the collaboration ahead.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Vidya.
I look forward to hearing more. So you've been listening to a Curious Advantage podcast. We're curious to hear from you. If you think that there was something useful or valuable from this conversation, we encourage you to write a review for the podcast on your preferred channel, saying why this was so and what you've learned from it. We always appreciate hearing our listeners' thoughts and having a curious conversation. So join the conversation today at hashtag Curious Advantage. The Curious Advantage book is available on Amazon worldwide. Order your copy now to further explore the 7 C's model for being more curious. Subscribe today and keep exploring curiously. See you next time.
Thank you for listening to the Curious Advantage podcast. The Curious Advantage book is now available to purchase on Amazon. Stay tuned for the next episode and keep exploring curiously. This podcast is produced by Aliki Palinelli and John McGinty and edited by Jill Damatak-Futter.